This morning we are presented with St. Mark's rendition of what is known as Peter's profession or confession of faith. Peter, speaking on behalf of the other apostles, is making a statement of faith about the identity of Jesus Christ. Now it's interesting because the passage begins, as you heard, with really what we might call the first opinion poll in recorded history. Jesus asks, "Who do people say that I am?" The apostles replied, 33% John the Baptist, 33% Elijah, and 33% still one of the prophets. Now, if you flip to a parallel passage in St. Matthew's rendition of this very scene, there's this moment where Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus' response is very interesting. He says, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of John, for it is not human flesh," that means man, "who revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven." Meaning to say, Jesus does not derive his identity based on human opinion or what the polls say who he is. Nor does he even get it from St. Peter's opinion, as sublime as that might be. Jesus is reminding his hearers that in a moment of extraordinary grace called infused knowledge, God the Father gave Peter the words so that there was no mistaking who Jesus Christ is. So you see, it is so important, and this is so important for us too. You know, even in the way our country was established, you realize that the founders, who were Europeans, came from different political experiences from the old country, Europe. And what they wanted to start in this country, maybe appropriate since we just passed 9/11, a day of great patriotism and pride in our nation, what they wanted to start in this republic was a way of life, a way of living freely. But what was foundational to it was where we defined our rights came from. The English said, right come from Parliament. The French said, rights come from the voice of the people. The founders of the United States said, neither is correct. Our rights are inalienable. They are not from other people. They are from God himself. We have rights, not because someone says we have rights because we are created in the image and likeness of God. A line of thought the founders borrowed from the Catholic Church, most of them were Protestants, it influenced their thought. And you see, it's so important that we realize this because so many times today, people are trying to define Jesus in their own terms without really looking at who he says he is. And just in case any of us might worry that we might just develop our own concept about who Jesus is, Jesus tells Peter, when you say you are the Christ, this isn't your opinion, pal. This is from God. The Father has told you so you could tell the rest of us. Jesus knows, of course, who he is. But the apostles might not have been quite sure. This is at the heart of the identity of Christ. His identity is not based on who we make him to be. It is based on who he is objectively. Now, hopefully, who we think him to be corresponds quite well with who he says he is. But that's the journey of faith. Is coming to see that, to accept it, to love it, to realize it, and to live a life accordingly. The dialogue between Peter and Jesus continues, and Jesus begins to openly teach that part of his messiahship is linked to rejection, suffering and death, and then eventually resurrection. Peter only hears the first few parts, rejection, suffering, and death. And so in Mark's own words, Peter takes Jesus aside and rebukes Jesus. Peter's bold, isn't he? Impetuous, for sure. Bold, no doubt. He He takes Jesus aside and he rebukes him. Now, I have been rebuked in my life. I'm sure many of you have been rebuked in your life. It's not fun. And it's insulting when you're rebuked by someone who has no right or authority to rebuke you. That's even more humiliating. And look at Jesus' response. Voice, strong words. The only stronger words that I can find in the Gospels is when Jesus told Judas, better that you had never been born. Ooh, you don't want God telling you that. But this is number two on our top 10 list of strong words Jesus makes. This is definitely number two. Get behind me, Satan. Oh my goodness. I mean, I wonder what the other apostles might have been thinking. Like, oh, you're in trouble now. What'd you do? Why did he say that? I mean, couldn't he easily have just said, Peter, listen, don't worry. Just relax. Just stay with me. Take the course here. You'll see. You'll see. You're being silly. Now, get behind me, Satan. Jesus speaks in very direct terms. Now, why? Well, what Peter is saying reminds Jesus of the 40 days of temptation that he endured in the desert after he was baptized in the Jordan River. And if you look at, I'm not going to analyze all the temptations today. We'll say that when that comes up in the gospel. But if you look at all the temptations and you distill it down to just the bottom line, what is Satan trying to get Jesus to do? He's essentially, at the end of the day, trying to get Jesus to abandon his mission, his vocation, of dying for us. And he takes different angles at it, but at the end of the day, if you just add it all up, what he's really after here is, Jesus, abandon your vocation, abandon your mission. Forget about it. And Jesus, when he hears these words from Peter, he's automatically taken back 3 years before, and he's, oh, the reaction is going to suddenly, you know, just remind you. You know when sometimes you've forgotten about something that made you angry once upon a time, and then someone mentions it and your blood boils like it was yesterday it happened? It's kind of like that. Jesus is like, don't you dare say that. Get behind me, Satan. Now, what about us in regards to this? Is it not, in fact, pandemic in our society today to be tempted precisely in the way the devil tempted Jesus and in the way Peter reminds Jesus of how he was tempted to abandon our vocation? Psychologists call this midlife crisis. You get to a certain point in your life, men usually before women. Men, it's usually age 35 to 45. Women, usually 40 to 50. This is what psychologists tell us. And what happens? You get to a certain point in your life, and you look behind, you look over your shoulder, and you look at where your life has gone. And for some, it's very empty. Others, less so. You examine your career, your marriage, your family. You look across the dinner table and you feel the heaviness and the weight of thinking, so this is it. This is pretty much it. That's my wife and those are my kids. There in the world are greener pastures, ladies and gentlemen, where it looks oh so much more pretty and alluring and exciting. Know what I mean? Everybody knows what I mean, especially if you've been there or are in it. You face this finality about your vocation and your mission in life. And if you're not grounded in your faith, if you're not praying with your spouse, if you are not connected with your children, you will eventually find enough reasons to leave. You will. parents alone, I spoke to at least one spouse of 24 different couples experiencing this pandemic problem in our society. Dissatisfaction with one's life, temptation to abandon, starting to scheme and make plans for what lies ahead because I'm going to try something new. Frustration with life, dissatisfaction with what my career has brought me and what I have to show for it. And I'll tell you, working with counselors as I do, in collaboration with these individuals and consulting back and forth with them, one of them said to me a couple of weeks ago, she's a very, very holy woman and who happens to be a counselor here in our area. She said to me, you know, Father, it is my opinion now that two spirits have been unleashed in hell like we've never seen before. The spirit of deception and the spirit of lust. And together, they are very, very dangerous. She tells me, business is brisk in my office, thanks to the devil. People are duped and duped and duped. And so now when I talk to the elders of our parish, our venerable elders, what's the number one thing that amazes them about the world today? Divorce, abandonment, neglect. They just can't believe all that they see. They're heartbroken by their children, their grandchildren, and they can't believe just how one day they dropped everything and ran the other direction. You see, if you've been a victim of this, if you've been in a marriage where this has happened, take heart. Jesus knows exactly what you're going through. Not because of marriage, even something even bigger than marriage. The project of the salvation of the entire world was what he had to wrestle with. So you see, at times when I talk to these couples and individuals, they are downtrodden, they're in disbelief, they're in shock. Father, this doesn't make sense. You're right, it doesn't make sense because it's not from God. I have never met a single person who has caused this kind of pain in marriage and family, in this parish or any other, who can look me square in the eye and tell me that what they are doing is the will of God. It is their will, no doubt, but not God's will. And that's why they never want to come see me. Because they can't tell me in the face, I know this is God's will, that I leave my husband and my children. They can't. So they prefer to live in darkness. My friends, this is pandemic now. I mean, I'm not talking about a few rare cases. It is everywhere. I see a lot of people nodding their heads in approval. You know what? You know. Why? They're your friends. Maybe it's you. Your relatives. You've seen it happen. So we need to go to this gospel and really dig deep down from it richly to enter into the very mystery about what Jesus is saying. He wants us to abandon our vocation. See, I can see it in the priesthood. So not exclude my brother priests. He wants us to abandon ship. So then, what is the final equation? Jesus says, then, so what? You're tempted? Fine. Here's the choice. The world preaches self-indulgence. I'm telling you self-denial. The world is teaching you avoid the cross. I say take it up. The world says follow your own will. I say follow the Father's will. You can do whatever the world says that you ought to do to make you happy. You will lose your life. You do what I say, you will lose your life by giving it to someone else, and that's precisely how you'll save it. It's just that simple. I don't have any pretty equations or cute euphemisms to make this any easier. That's just it. I'm sorry. And I'm not sorry. Because that's Jesus' words, not mine. So my friends, today, Take a good hard look where you are, in your families, in your marriages, where you want to be. Is it in fact the case that you are slowly slipping away from that which God has called you to be faithful in your vocation? And let us pray today for each other, that we will be encouraged by one another, that we will support one another in our desire to remain faithful to that which God has called us, so that hopefully in future generations, elderly people will not look over their shoulder and say, look what has happened to our children and our grandchildren, the divorce continues. We have the capacity to make it stop. It's within our reach. Let us pray today for that fortitude that only God can give, so that we can truly acknowledge that Jesus is the Christ, and it is to whom we owe all of our love. O Mary, conceived without sin.